では、これから英語の試験を行います。英語の試験は、はじめにリスニング、次にリーディングの順序で行います。リーディングの指示は、リスニングが終わった後で行います。試験に関する指示は、すべて録音された音声によって行いますので、ページの開閉も音声の指示に従ってください。これからリスニングの指示を読みますので、問題冊子の表紙を見ながら注意して聞いてください。1. リスニングにはパート1、2、3の3つがあります。2. 各パートが始まる前に日本語で説明をします。注意して聞いてください。3. 問題冊子には問いと4つの選択肢が与えられています。その中から最も適当と思われる答えを1つ選んで、回答カードの相当欄をマークしてください。4. 各パートが終わったら、音声による指示があるまで他のページを開けないで待っていてください。5. パート1では10の短い会話を聞きます。それぞれの会話についての問いに答えてください。6. パート2ではパート1より長い会話を2つ聞きます。それぞれの会話についての問いに答えてください。7. パート3では講義を3つ聞きます。講義の内容についてそれぞれ5つの問いに答えてください。8. 会話や講義を聞きながらメモを取っても構いません。回答カードのマークの仕方は1ページに書かれています。では1ページを開けて確認してください。それではこれから試験を始めます。パート1では10の短い会話を聞きます。会話を聞きながらメモを取っても構いません。それぞれの会話についての問いに答えてください。問題冊子に書かれている問いを読み、最も適当と思われる答えを1つ選んで、回答カードの相当欄をマークしてください。10番の回答が終わっても、指示があるまで次のページを開けないで待っていてください。では、2ページを開けてください。
Now, let's begin. 1.
I can't connect to the internet in this classroom. So annoying. How about you, Akiko? Can you connect to the Wi-Fi here?
Yeah, Alex. I don't have any problem. Let's take a look. Have you entered your student ID and your password?
Yes, but it says my ID is invalid.
Can I just check one thing?Ah, okay. You've actually been trying to connect to the faculty Wi-Fi. This other network is for students.
Ah, I see. Thanks for your help.
Two.
Hey, do you have a pen? I guess we need to take notes in this session.
Sure. Here you go.Yeah, this is going to be about what we need to do during our first week of university. I'm sure there'll be a lot to remember.
I need to learn how to register for courses. I'm worried that I won't be able to enroll in the classes I want to take if I do something wrong.
We'll be okay. I heard there's a group of students who will help us with that.
Three.
Excuse me, Professor Yamamoto. I feel like I've been making progress in your English class, but I'd like to know what else I can do to improve my speaking skills.
Well, if you want more practice outside of class, why don't you join an English language club?
Oh, what's that? Could you tell me more?
I'm relatively new here, so I'm not sure about this university, but when I was a college student,I was part of an English language club that met during lunch on weekdays. We practiced speech, debate, discussion, and drama in English.
Four.
Hi, Genta. Are you okay? You look a little worried.
Hi, Miku. Actually, I've been overwhelmed by my extensive reading class. We've got to read at least one English book every week, but it's taking me so much time.
You should ask your teacher to postpone the deadline. At this university, you can negotiate with teachers about things like that.
I wish I could, but I don't have a good enough reason. Besides, we're going to discuss the book in class, so I don't think I can ask for an extension.
Five.
Hey, Satomi. Where are you off to?
The guest lecture by the architect who designed the new building on campus.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that. She's really famous, right? I think I'll join you.
Great, but it'll be hard to get in unless you registered in advance. Although, I think it's also being shown live on a big screen in another lecture hall. You might be able to watch it from there.
Okay, but I hope I can watch her in person.
Six.
Hi, Rosa. I noticed you weren't in class on Monday. Were you sick?
Yeah, I wasn't feeling well and I had to leave campus early. What did you do in class that day?
Professor Harris introduced the upcoming essay assignment, and we got started on brainstorming and outlining in class.
Oh no, that sounds like important information. I wish I hadn't missed that class.
If you visit Professor Harris during office hours, I'm sure he'll explain the assignment for you. You should email him.
Yes, I'll do that.
Seven.
The field trip last weekend was so much fun. That was actually the first time I've ever been on one.
Me too. For this geography course, it looks like we'll be going on 3 more trips. I'm excited because it's a really engaging way to learn.
Yes, I totally agree. But that's a lot of field trips. I just hope they don't get in the way of my other studies.
Actually, I think we'll be okay. My friend took this course last year, and she said she managed fine. She just made sure to get her work done in advance when there was a field trip coming up.
Eight.
Hi. I'm interested in studying abroad next year, and I know our university has a number of exchange programs. I've already completed the online application form. Can you tell me what else I need to do to apply?
Sure. The rest of the application consists of a few different documents. You'll need to obtain a record that shows your grades so far this year and a letter of recommendation from your academic advisor. You also have to write an essay outlining your reasons for wishing to study overseas. If your application passes the first round, there'll then be an interview with 3 professors.
Wow, that's a lot. Do many students apply?
Yes, it's a very competitive process. Good luck.
Nine.
Hey, Daejeong. You're taking Professor Sato's Introduction to Psychology this term, aren't you?
I am, Miki. You too, right?
Yeah, actually, I'm thinking about organizing a study group. You know, the professor introduced several theories, but I can't fully understand them. I thought maybe, if we study together, we can learn more. We can also do assignments together. What do you think?
That's a great idea. I've also been struggling with all these theories, like, can you explain what structuralism is and what functionalism is? Well, I can talk to some other classmates to see if they want to join us, and then we can arrange our first meeting.
10.
What do you think about the new law that the government passed recently? I feel so angry about it.
You read my mind. I wanted to talk about this with someone. The law seems so unfair to foreigners, especially asylum seekers.
I know. I want to do something about it. How about joining a protest? We could check social media for information.
Yeah, that's a good idea. But before we join a protest, first let's read some articles and learn more about the background of this law.
Yeah, sounds good.
パート 2 ではパート 1 より長い会話を 2 つ聞きます。会話を聞きながらメモを取っても構いません。それぞれの会話について問題冊子に書かれている問いを読み、最も適当と思われる答えを 1つ選んで、回答カードの相当欄をマークしてください。 15番の回答が終わっても指示があるまで次のページを開けないで待っていてください。 では 4ページを開けてください。
Questions 11 to 12. Joe and Mie are talking about professors at their university.
Hi Mie. I heard you send flowers to Professor Suzuki from our class. That was very kind of you. Thank you.
No problem, Joe. It's good to hear that the baby was born safe and well. I heard it's a boy.
Oh, you know the details? Where did you hear that?
Professor Nelson told me. He's Professor Suzuki's close friend, and he visited her a few days ago. I happened to see him this morning, and he told me the latest news. He also said that Professor Suzuki will be back at the end of next semester.
I see. Do you know who's going to cover her classes?
Professor Nelson said he's going to be the substitute teacher. I know he's very strict, unlike Professor Suzuki, but I like him because I can learn a lot.
Oh, really? I've never taken his class, but his field is also psychology. And if you like his class, I'm sure I'll like it too. By the way, how much were the flowers?
Oh, don't worry about that. They weren't expensive.
No, no. I think we should all split the bill.
Really? Okay. Do you think I should talk to the other classmates about it?
I can send a message to them. You've already done so many things for us and for Professor Suzuki, so it's my turn. Questions 13 to 15. A student is talking to a librarian.
Excuse me. I'm a new student, and this is my first time using this library. Could you explain how many books I can borrow and how I can check out books?
Sure, no problem. You can borrow as many books as you want. It's generous, right? And the easiest way to check out the books is to bring them to the library counter with your ID card. You can find a counter at each of the two entrances, the main entrance here and the other one on the second floor.
I see. How about those self-checkout machines? I saw many students using them.
Oh, you can use them too, of course. Let me show you how to use them. Please follow me. First, scan your student ID card. The one you used when you entered the library.
Uh-huh. This one, right?
Yes. Let me use my ID card for now. Once you scan it, you'll see this message.
Okay. It says, please place the book on the machine.
Right. So you put the books here, one by one, and you let the machine scan the library's barcode on the book. Make sure you do not scan the book's original barcode. Each book has two barcodes, the one with the university's logo and the other without the logo.
Oh, it's a bit tricky. I'll be careful about that.
Yes, please. Once you finish scanning the books you'd like to check out, touch Finish on the screen. Then check the information on the screen to confirm how many books you've checked out. If the information is correct, touch Close.
Okay, I understand. And how can I return my books? Can I use these checkout machines?
Actually, no. You have two choices. When you return books, you can return them at the counter, or you can put the books in the return box at the main entrance. You must have seen it when you entered the library.
Oh, I think I remember that. That box, right? What if I want to return the books when the library's closed?
Good question. When the library is closed, we move the return box outside the main entrance, so you can return your books even on Sundays.
That's great. Now I think I understand how to use the library. Thank you so much.
問題冊子はそのままにして、パート3についての説明を聞いてください。パート3では3つの講義を聞きます。講義を聞きながらメモを取っても構いません。それぞれの講義終了後に90秒の回答時間が与えられます。講義について問題冊子に書かれている5つの問いを読み、最も適当と思われる答えを1つ選んで、回答カードの相当欄をマークしてください。では、6ページを開けて、1つ目の講義を聞いてください。
Question 16 to 20. Listen to the lecture about bilingualism.
You may think bilingualism is an extraordinary phenomenon. Many educators, parents, and policymakers view developing bilingual proficiency as desirable. But in the modern world, bilingualism is the norm. In fact, according to some international surveys, the number of bilinguals and multilinguals exceeds the number of monolinguals. Yet, defining a bilingual individual is not as simple as defining a monolingual individual. This is because there are many types of bilinguals. For example, a productive bilingual refers to a person who can speak and comprehend two languages, whereas a receptive bilingual is a person who can understand a second language but cannot speak it. Meanwhile, a sequential bilingual is an individual who began learning a second language either in school or at home after the age of 5, whereas a simultaneous bilingual started learning two languages at home before the age of 5. In this lecture, let me focus on the final category, simultaneous bilinguals. For parents to raise simultaneous bilinguals, it is crucial to keep a balance between the majority language and the minority language. The majority language is a language used in the community, while the minority language is a different language used by at least one parent at home. As bilingual children grow up, they can start acquiring the majority language at school and in their community. The problem is that they don't have the same opportunity to practice their minority language if they don't use it at home. Therefore, to develop children's minority language skills, many bilingual parents adopt a family language policy called a one-parent, one-language policy. As the name indicates, this policy means children need to speak the minority language to one parent and the majority language to another parent at home. For example, imagine a child called Ken growing up in Japan with a Japanese father, Tsuyoshi, and an Australian mother, Judy, whose first language is English. Ken can learn Japanese in his community, and Tsuyoshi would use Japanese in the house. However, to improve Ken's English, Judy would use English at home. One possible challenge with the one-parent, one-language policy is that the child might start speaking the majority language to the parent who normally speaks the minority language at home. In such a case, how do these bilingual parents respond to their children? Elizabeth Lanza was the first researcher who observed such complex interactions in bilingual families. She presented several strategies parents use when their children say something in the majority language. I'm going to explain three of these strategies, so I suggest you take some notes. To make my explanation easy to understand, I'll continue to use Ken's family's case. Let's imagine Ken speaks Japanese to his mother, Judy. For instance, nanka tabetai. The first strategy for Judy is called the minimal grasp strategy. She asks Ken in English to clarify the meaning by saying, for example, what did you say? In this way, Judy is requesting Ken to respond in English. The second one is the expressed guess strategy. In this strategy, Judy asks a question in English that translates Ken's utterance, encouraging Ken to respond to her in English. For instance, Judy may say, "Did you say you want something to eat?" The third one is the move on strategy. In this approach, Judy responds to Ken in English without using any of the previous two strategies and keeps talking in English even if Ken keeps speaking Japanese to her. With this strategy, Ken may start using English as the conversation goes on. So, following Lanza's work, which strategies should be employed to raise simultaneous bilinguals? In general, if parents continue using strategies that create a strong need to communicate in the minority language, their children are more likely to develop their minority language proficiency. In this sense, rather than the move-on strategy, other strategies, such as the minimal grasp strategy and the expressed guess strategy, should be used. That being said, the parental interaction patterns at home do not need to be fixed. They can be influenced by children's linguistic development and parents' desire to raise children bilingually. Besides, children's schools' language policy and their age also matter. Considering these complex factors, parents do not have to stick rigidly to one particular family language policy or interaction pattern, but can be flexible in how they choose to raise simultaneous bilingual children.
では、16番から20番までの問いに答えてください。回答時間は90秒です。 では、8ページに進んで、2つ目の講義を聞いてください。
Questions 21 to 25. Listen to the lecture about artificial grass.
The use of artificial grass, or fake grass, has become popular lately. A recent survey in the UK showed that 10% of the population with outdoor space have replaced some lawn with fake grass, and a further 29% of the population would consider doing so. And the global market for artificial grass rose 8.4% from $4.49 billion in 2022 to $4.87 billion in 2023. It's expected to reach $6.83 billion by 2027. However, many people are starting to question the use of artificial grass, especially in domestic gardens. For example, the prestigious Chelsea Flower Show in London banned it for their 2023 show, and the UK government is considering banning its use in new housing development schemes. The main concerns people have about artificial grass revolve around potential environmental problems. At a time when climate change is a major global issue, is it a good idea to be replacing natural grass with fake grass made of plastic? Let's start by looking at the carbon footprint of artificial grass, that is, the greenhouse gases generated by its use. Some argue that fake grass is good for the environment because it doesn't require maintenance after it's installed, whereas natural grass is regularly cut with gasoline-powered mowers. However, far more greenhouse gases are released in the manufacture, transportation, and installation of fake grass than in the maintenance of natural grass. For instance, because artificial grass is plastic, the production process requires the use of fossil fuels in the form of oil and large amounts of water. Ultimately, using artificial grass rather than natural grass increases carbon emissions. And what's more, after its life cycle, fake grass is not biodegradable and cannot be recycled easily. So it often ends up just being thrown away. Another problem is heat. Fake grass can get extremely hot. Studies have shown that compared to natural grass, the surface temperature of artificial grass can reach from 35 to 60 degrees Celsius higher in the summer. Besides the obvious dangers of this to people and pets, it contributes to urban heat islands. These heat islands exist where natural land has largely been replaced by concrete and other substances that absorb heat. While natural grass has a cooling effect on the environment, artificial grass absorbs and retains more heat. This can further intensify increasing urban temperatures. As you know, like increasing temperatures, flooding is another phenomenon we see more of these days, and there are fears fake grass can worsen this problem too. Natural grass is important for regulating water, as it acts like a sponge in the way it absorbs rain. This plays a significant role in sustainable urban drainage. Fake grass, on the other hand, is much less effective in water absorbency. During the installation of fake grass, the top layer of soil is replaced with sand and gravel. So while some water can drain through small holes in the artificial grass, overall, 50% less rainwater is absorbed compared to natural grass. This leads to an increase in surface water during heavy rainfall, raising the risk of flash flooding. Furthermore, the surface water can carry microplastics from the fake grass into drainage systems, which can be discharged into rivers and the sea. Overall, people may opt for fake grass in their gardens because they feel it's easy to maintain and they can have an evergreen look throughout the year. But while there may be some benefits to using artificial grass, it can be seen as another attempt by humans to control nature, the triumph of convenience over environmental concerns. And there are other problems besides harm to the environment. In the next class, we'll look at one of those, the potential health issues caused by artificial grass.
では、21番から25番までの問いに答えてください。回答時間は90秒です。 では、10ページに進んで3つ目の講義を聞いてください。
Questions 26 to 30. Listen to the lecture about musicals.
Immigrants, we get the job done. This is a famous line from one of the biggest hit Broadway musicals of this century, Hamilton. Musicals are one of the most popular entertainments in the United States. But did you know that immigrants played a significant role in the early days of musicals?Although musicals have roots in European opera and operetta, today they symbolize American culture, thanks, in large part, to the innovative creativity of immigrants. In this lecture, I'd like to talk about the history of Broadway musicals by spotlighting immigrants. In the early 20th century, when the U.S. was growing into an industrial country, over a million immigrants arrived annually, mainly from Southeastern Europe.This overlapped with the foundation era of musicals, from the early 1920s to the late 1950s, and many first and second generation immigrants played key roles as composers, producers, or actors. For instance, the musical Showboat was produced in 1927, with music by Jerome Kern and lyrics by Oscar Hammerstein II, both of whom had Jewish-German roots.Showboat was the first musical that seriously depicted an interracial marriage. It incorporated black music into musical theatre at a time when black people were severely discriminated against and segregated. Many contemporary scholars believe that Showboat changed the course of musical theatre, moving away from the heavy operettas and the superficial music comedies that audiences were used to. The characters were far more realistic,and the integration of music and plot was far more skillfully done. In 1943, Kern and Hammerstein also wrote the music for the musical titled Oklahoma, directed by Ruben Mamoulian, a first-generation immigrant. They integrated elements, including music, lyrics, choreography, set, and costumes, to advance the plot. This musical has received numerous awards,and even now holds a significant place in the history of performing arts. In 1957, Leonard Bernstein, a second-generation Ukrainian immigrant, created music for West Side Story. It portrays the rivalry between two teenage street gangs of different ethnic backgrounds and was nominated for 6 Tony Awards in 1958, including Best Musical. Now,What enabled these immigrants to achieve success and contribute to musicals? Charles Hirschman, an American sociologist, says that these immigrant artists had advantages such as resilience and determination to succeed, curiosity and openness to changes, and attraction to high-risk pursuits. Hirschman argues that these advantages led immigrants, especially second-generation immigrants,to bring fresh perspectives and unconventional approaches to musicals, which revolutionized the art form. These newcomers had little interest in preserving the art forms of their homelands. Instead, they focused more on innovation. For example, Jewish musicians recognized black music in the US as culturally important, and they blended European music with black music. Hirschman postulates that, as minorities,these artists were more willing to defy taboos to follow their musical instincts. Ruben Mamoulian, who directed Oklahoma, said in an interview with the New York Times, "You must trust your instinct, intuition, and judgment. You must do something different." Let's go back to the first example, Hamilton. It's a story of Alexander Hamilton, one of the founding fathers of America, who was born in the Caribbean.It was created by Lin-Manuel Miranda, a New York-born child of immigrants from Puerto Rico. Hamilton casts non-white actors as the founding fathers and other historical figures. It is remarkable that the white characters involved in the founding of the country are played by ethnically diverse actors. Also note that Miranda blends hip-hop and pop music with conventional Broadway music. He described this musical as about America then,as told by America Now. Today, I talked about the history of musicals spotlighting immigrants. I don't think it's too much to say that if the US had not accepted immigrants, there would be no Broadway musicals.
では、 26番から30番までの問いに答えてください。回答時間は90秒です。鉛筆を置いてください。これでリスニングは終わりです。引き続きリーディングに進みます。